What is the cost of passivity to us as adult children of divorce? That's an intriguing topic I'd like to discuss with you today on this episode of Heart in a Drawer, the podcast for adult children of divorce. I'm glad to be back with you this week on Heart in a Drawer, and I apologize for the background noise the last time. It was the bullfrogs in my pond. I recorded it at night, so now I'm recording it during the day to avoid their bellowing in the background. So I've been thinking about this topic of passivity and how it affects us. I received one of the best compliments in my life as an adult when I told a story, an old story about me being passive, and the person who didn't know me growing up said, "I could have never pictured you doing something like that." And I knew that was a sign of growth, and I praised God for it. So, what is passivity? Basically, it is acting in a passive way rather than an active way. It's letting things kind of happen as they fall. It's not necessarily speaking up when you should. It's not being assertive. And it can cost us a lot in our relationships, all different kinds of relationships, but particularly if this is maybe a coping mechanism that we're using due to the hurt and trauma that we've experienced being children of divorce. So several years ago, when I started blogging, I wrote about this on my blog, and I would like to read some of this to you and then unpack it and kind of bring it into my experience now as an adult. So I'm going to read these blog posts to you, and I hope that you gain some insight from them. This is from a blog post called How Passivity Cost Me Part 1. One day in January of my junior year, I was startled to hear a boy calling out my name in the hallway between classes. I literally jumped when he spoke to me. I knew him slightly. We had shared a few classes. There he was asking me on a date. I couldn't believe it, but I was more shocked to hear my own voice saying, "Yes, that sounds good." He smiled triumphantly, but I turned to my locker, flustered. As I processed my feelings after school, one thread ran through my thoughts. Maybe this is the kind of change I need. Maybe a new boyfriend is the solution. The truth was, I wasn't ready for a romantic relationship. Not so soon after the darkness of the previous semester. This boy persisted with me for so little reward. On our dates, I avoided physical contact by sitting as far away from him as I could. At the movie theater, I kept my hands stuffed deep into my coat pockets so he wouldn't have a chance at holding them. I observed him with fear and suspicion and talked only about surface issues. I just wasn't ready to trust my heart with anyone, and I strung him along. The more I learned about him, the more I decided a relationship with him wouldn't work. My overriding feeling was that we would never really understand each other because he came from a stable home and mine was messy and complicated. In The Unexpected Legacy of Divorce, the authors write, "Children of divorce desperately need to tell their story, but age mates who have not lived through divorce are not all that sympathetic. So they look for and find someone who can listen and understand." I don't know why I didn't break it off with him, other than I was afraid to cause conflict. I knew he wanted me to be his date for prom, and I felt I owed it to him for putting up with me. I worried about being in front of peers with him, because I knew I wouldn't be able to hide my standoffish tendencies in public. When he offered me his class ring, I panicked. I knew he felt more strongly for me than I did for him. I refused his ring that night, but I agreed to be his prom date. I felt obligated to accompany him after 4 months of dating, even though we had barely become friends. The irony is that I longed for male attention but pushed away what was offered. I worried about repeating the mistakes in my previous relationship, but I didn't see a way out without hurting or embarrassing him, the one who had been patient with me. I feared his physical expectations of prom night, but I was resigned to the fact that I had to comply if I wanted to avoid conflict. So in my next post, I talk about how that passivity cost me. This is from my post titled, How Passivity Cost Me, Part 2. The bathroom was my hiding place as a passive teenage girl, not just when I needed time to myself on lonely nights. I used the bathroom as an escape during dates when the situation rose beyond my control. On a date at my house in the spring of 1994, my boyfriend scooted closer and closer toward me as we watched a movie. Though we had dated for months, we really hadn't touched each other yet, and I was afraid. I stuffed myself into a corner of the couch, worried sick about the prospect of his arm around me. When he eventually stretched his arm out, I jumped to my feet and said, "I'll be right back." Then I sat in the bathroom for 10 minutes trying to get my breathing under control. When I came out, he had scooted over so far that I had no choice other than to touch him by sitting down. So I chose the recliner instead, realizing he would be disappointed. But he didn't challenge me. He sighed, and we watched the movie in silence. On prom night, we met another couple for photos and dinner first. At his buddy's house, when he embraced me intimately for a photo, I panicked and ran to their bathroom. I felt violated and trapped. I did not know what to do. If I brought up how he had crossed a line without my consent, it would ruin the evening before it even began. So I stuffed my feelings and proceeded with the evening. On the ride to the restaurant, he asked me, "Are you sure everything is okay?" And I demurred, afraid an honest response would ignite a fire. "Yep," I replied, burying my anger. At prom, I ran to the bathroom again, my anger irrepressible by that point. He had obviously planned to show me off that evening, and I wasn't prepared for the falsehood. Our relationship was a sham, and I couldn't pretend anymore. I was so angry at him for touching me that I carefully considered how I could sneak out and walk home. Eventually, I realized I couldn't escape without someone noticing my fancy clothes, so I reluctantly scratched the idea. That's how frustrated I felt about the evening. I wanted to escape, to run out the back door, to disappear. But when he pulled me so close against my will while we danced, I knew the end was near. I would only have to endure the rest of the dance, and then our relationship would be over. I dreaded making a scene on the dance floor by pushing him away with both hands and becoming a spectacle, though that's what I really wanted to do. So I paid the price and barely held my tears back. I had no escape, nowhere to hide for those few tortured moments. That night was a testament to the cost of my passivity. I feared conflict so badly that I violated my own standards to keep the, quote, peace. This unhealthy dynamic had haunted me for years, and it haunted me for many more after that night, until I learned I could speak up for myself and not passively endure mistreatment. In the book, Happiness is a Choice, the authors talk about passivity in this quote. A depressed individual tends to become passive. He lets others run over him. He simply takes it and turns inward, becoming bitter and depressed. The healthy balance is to be assertive. To be assertive is to express in love and in a tactful way how we feel. To be assertive is to keep others from being irresponsible, especially when it concerns us and relates to us," end quote. I had to learn that I was worth protecting, worth defending, and worth cherishing. I didn't feel that way growing up as a child of divorce. I felt abandoned, unprotected, not special enough to garner attention. I was stuck in emotional survival mode of taking whatever love I could get, even though I was letting others tread on me like a doormat. When my sense of self-worth was restored through my relationship with God, I began to realize that I needed to protect it and defend it. I had to learn to be assertive and speak out against sin others inflicted upon me. I couldn't afford to hide any longer if I wanted to be the strong, capable woman that God called me to be. I don't hide in bathrooms anymore. When conflict arises, I calmly deal with it if it warrants a confrontation. This has taken years of practice. The girl I was in the high school gymnasium bathroom on prom night didn't know she had the right and the power to speak up. But I know now, and I think I'm making that young girl inside very proud. So I want to ask you, after listening to that story, have you ever paid a high price for your passivity? Have you let someone mistreat you because of it? Have you suffered embarrassment, shame, or possibly even violation because of it? Has someone else's actions against you and your inaction against them cost you for years and years? Well, I can see that in my past story. I can see how I needed counseling to overcome that. As I said on every episode, that I believe in the power of counseling to help us overcome our issues as adult children of divorce, and this was essential in helping me overcome my tendency toward passivity. In fact, I remember when I went to a counselor really for the first time when I was a college student, also a newlywed, that was one of the last things that she told me. She gave me this handout on being assertive, and I honestly didn't even know what that looked like. In fact, if you had asked me at the time, I would have said that that was unchristian, in quotes. It was unchristian to stand up to someone. And what I learned by reading the book Boundaries, which I have recommended many, many times on this podcast, is that Jesus said no. And he was unapologetic about it. He believed in the power of no as much as he believed in the power of yes. And he told us that we should let our yes be yes and our no be no, and anything beyond that is from the devil. He speaks that strongly against either side of that coin. If we're overly aggressive, that's not okay. If we're overly passive, that's not okay. And I had to learn to exercise that assertive muscle to set boundaries in my relationships, and that made me stronger. Now, it has cost many relationships for me. It has changed many of them, and not for the good. But the truth is, if you are on a path of healing to move from being a passive person to being an assertive person, you are going to receive a lot of pushback for that. There are people who have manipulated you and controlled you your whole life, and they're not going to like you standing up to them. But honestly, when I think about John 10:10, when Jesus says, "I have come that you might have life and have life to the full," the abundant life, some translations say, I believe the abundant life is an assertive life. It's a life where we are empowered to make our own choices that don't depend on anybody else except what God is telling us to do. And when we can live in that truth, we can be much stronger to walk the path of righteousness for God's sake, for His glory. And I remember shortly after my ex-husband walked out of our house this January, I was praying, and God told me in one of my prayers, He said, essentially, your marriage ended because of boundaries, and is that such a bad thing? I had set boundaries against his alcoholism and his emotional abuse, and he didn't want to meet me where I needed him to be on those things. And though it cost me my marriage, it wasn't the first time I had said it. I had said it repeatedly over the years, but it cost me my marriage, but it made me a stronger person. And I don't regret being assertive on those issues, because marriage shouldn't look like alcoholism or emotional abuse. That's not God's design for a healthy relationship. I've also had to take a stand against two primary relationships in my life this year because of blatant and very harmful narcissistic behavior. It hurt to set those boundaries, and yet it restored my mental, emotional, physical, and relational and spiritual well-being to do such a thing. It was very difficult. I did so with the help of my counselor, with the help of my Stephen minister, with other praying friends, but it really was the best thing that I could do. And I think back to when I was seeing that counselor really for the first time in 2001, and just taking those first baby steps of becoming assertive and laying aside my passive ways. I had to have years and years and years of practice before I could stand up as firmly and strongly as I did this year in 2022. And God was preparing me for over 20 years to take those stands that would be good for me, healthy for me, and wise for me in this season that I'm in, against the injustice that was being perpetrated against me. I have also seen how passivity has affected some of the other relationships in my extended family, how people didn't stand up when they could have, how they didn't advocate for others when they could have, and how that cost so many people, many more than they probably realized it would. And I have learned by those negative examples what not to do in my life, what not to do in my kids' lives as they grow into adults, how not to treat them once they get married, once they have children. I don't want to act passively. I don't want to cost them the way that other people have cost me because of their passivity. It's had to take a lot of introspection, reflection, again, talks with my counselor and Stephen minister to kind of come to grips with all the ways that passivity has cost me and why I need to choose assertiveness even when it's hard, because it always brings me rewards that passivity never does. The fear of conflict, the fear of losing approval is what drove my passivity as a younger person. And now I don't have that anymore. I don't have that fear of what other people think about me. I'm not trying to please people anymore. I am trying to please God. And that goes along with a verse that I want to read to you from the NIV version. This is Galatians 1:10. Am I now trying to win the approval of human beings or of God? Or am I trying to please people? If I were still trying to please people, I would not be a servant of Christ. This is Paul speaking. These are pretty strong terms. He's saying that if we're going to call ourselves servants of Christ, we cannot live to please people. We have to please God. And I believe that God will empower us to become assertive, to be able to speak the truth in love. That takes a lot of practice. It takes a lot of trial and error to be able to speak the truth in love and set the boundaries that we need to set in order to preserve or promote greater health in our relationships. So I know this has been a pretty meaty episode. I would love to have any of your feedback on it. You can reach out to me on my contact page, which is linked in the show notes. I'm also going to link all of these books and references in the show notes in case you want to dive deeper into this topic. Let me close us out with prayer today. Father God, I thank you that you call us to have an active faith, a faith that asks, seeks, and knocks for your will in our lives, a faith that will say yes when we mean yes and no when we mean no. And I know that if any of us are struggling with passivity, you have the power to set us free, Lord. You will set us free for your glory. You will help us live that abundant life that you have promised for us. And that is going to take courage. It's going to take strength. And if we don't feel like we have that in ourselves, we can rely on you to grant it to us. So I pray that you would help us to be assertive people for your glory, not passive people who are really serving Satan. And I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you for listening this week. I hope you'll join me next week for another original episode. And until next week, I'm praying that God will give you peace in your healing journey as an adult child of divorce.